We're going to get a chance to talk about that a little bit later. We're going to try to tie in with the University of North Dakota and, you know, get some individuals that have some expertise when it comes to how to debate and how does a good old-fashioned debate work and how do you grade it. Also, Roger Moe is going to join us today. But I was challenged earlier in this week by a listener, and we take those pretty personal when we think that the challenge is valid. You know, I get challenged to a lot of things. But the listener brought up and he said, why haven't you checked into why Manitoba has done so much better than North Dakota when it comes to the fight against COVID? And so I started digging, right? And I have a crack research department that helps me as well. The facts that they gave me was that Manitoba obviously has more people, 1,380,000 people versus us at 749. But listen to these numbers. Deaths from COVID, North Dakota, 422. Manitoba, 43. Total cases to date, North Dakota, 34,165. Manitoba, 3,626. Total active cases, North Dakota, just shy of 6,000. Manitoba, 1,774. Hospitalized for COVID, North Dakota, 145. Manitoba, 34. And, of course, one of the biggest stats that you don't even want to look at is, you know, the one about, you know, deaths. Obviously, that's the one that jumps out at you. North Dakota having that 422 and Manitoba 43. So then you start looking at planning and you start looking at, okay, there's obviously some thought that goes into this. And one of the individuals that was brought to my attention was Hazel Boris. Now, she's president of Placemakers. Now, go to this website if you're in front of your computer, www.placemakers.com, and look at the work her and her team has done. I called her. She's willing to give us some of her time. Hazel, good to have you on News and Views.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Not many people can get me to sit up on a Wednesday night and start reading their website, but you did. And I have to tell you, Hazel, it's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to hear that.
Now, one of the things that you have here is a 22-point plan to deal with this. Explain to people what that plan is.
Sure. You know, at the moment, it feels like with doom scrolling some of our most frequent behavior these days, and it's easy to get distracted by the stuff we can't really personally control. This pandemic toolkit is just trying to hone in on the actions we can take today as communities around the world to really make a difference.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Hazel.
Just to, you know, to rebuild a little bit of economic resilience for everybody.
See, that's what jumps out at me is in your plan, you talk about how business can still operate. And I think at times people are losing sight of that. So give people some examples of what you put in there.
Sure. So, you know, this is the first 22 actions that we believe local government should take. And the first one's probably the biggest one and the most challenging one, of prioritizing equity and justice. And that's a big topic we could spend the entire show discussing in and of itself. But then after that big one, the next ones are the little steps. We start small. Action number two is the first thing cities and towns and suburbs should be doing, and that is enabling outdoor dining. And a lot of people have done that in ways that require businesses to go put in applications and pay fees. But other cities are doing it a different way. They are just making city council proclamations that clearly lay out the rules and what you're agreeing to. And then they literally let people kind of decant their businesses out into the sidewalks and sometimes the travel lanes and sometimes the parking lanes and sometimes the city parks, so that businesses can still stay active while we keep people safeguarded and physically distanced and healthy.
Hazel, when I read this last night, so much of it made sense. And in the different steps, obviously some of them, like any person, I looked at some of them and I nodded my head and thought, okay, that one's just, why in the world wouldn't we be doing that? And the other ones look more seasonal, you know, and you in Winnipeg, obviously, and in Manitoba have the same type of climate that we have. And so some of what you've written here is in relation to, you know, how we can deal with this economically, but yet we're still looking at snow. And so can you give us some advice in that area?
Sure. I mean, Winnipeg is the third coldest city on earth with a population of 800,000 or more people. So, you know, I feel like my neighbors and colleagues and friends here have done a really good job of learning how to live outside year round and really kind of embrace it. And, you know, one of the things that's super important for us is keeping a park system and a trail network that is active and engaged and groomed year round. And so, you know, if that first step out my door is interesting enough, then I'm much more likely to suit up in the kind of layers that's needed to survive year round in our Manitoba winter. So, you know, parks are a big deal for us, but also really kind of upping the ante on how we can dine al fresco even when it's minus 10 or minus 20. Now, when it's down to minus 40, it's probably not, these ideas won't have as much traction, obviously.
One of the things you list is your pandemic toolkit. Talk to me about that so people understand really what you and the folks in Manitoba are getting at with that.
Yeah, the toolkit is just, you know, trying to simplify these bigger placemaking ideas of, you know, hey, we can rewrite all of our policies, we can rewrite all of our zoning and subdivision to allow more connected, convivial, high return places. Those are like the bigger city planning ideas that are for the long haul. But this toolkit is for the short term, and it's really about unlocking that incremental urbanism that really has been shown to give higher returns, both economic returns, but both also social and environmental return.
You know, one of the biggest things that I've noticed I want to use my daughters as an example. One of the biggest concerns that they have, other than the fact that their children can't go to school then, is making sure that their careers can go forward at a time when daycares and other places aren't taking children. And I'm curious, because that's such a big part of the economy, is those, you know, those people that are left out of the workplace now, or that are in a situation where sometimes they just can't work from home. Well, how did Winnipeg deal with that?
You know, that's such an ongoing challenge that I don't think that there's any one specific way, but I think it's, you know, approaching that idea from a bunch of different angles. And initially Winnipeg, you know, back in March, shut down all of our schools and just went to remote learning. And, you know, I have a son in school, and so that was definitely a new dynamic for all of us. And for some people who already had a large home office experience in life, of course, it was a lot easier. But for our frontline workers, it became a lot harder. The way that that Winnipeg has gone about it now, of course, is to reopen schools with physical distancing and mask wearing and cohorts that go to school a third of the time. So, you know, dividing schools into three cohorts, and then each cohort only attends school three out of every six of the school days of the cycle. And by doing so far has done a pretty good job of isolating the COVID outbreaks that we have been experiencing in our schools here. and, you know, allowing it to go forward. Also in Winnipeg, though, people are doing a significant amount of outdoor learning, and that's usually so far based more around music classes, you know, when people are going to be singing or creating more high-risk behavior, making those classes outside. And that's been an interesting process to watch as well. But I think another really important thing to your question is changing the rules to allow people to work from home more effectively. And so one of those rules is not just enabling that, which many cities do, but also reducing the parking restrictions on how many people can gather. So our city council is reviewing that this week and looking at how they can not have such high parking minimums required for people to gather safely in small groups for working at home.
Hazel, are the people in Manitoba scared? Are they learning to live with this in their life? Do they feel they have control of this pandemic?
I think it's probably based on who you ask. But I feel like the general vibe and the community, at least in the circles that I've been in, is hopeful, cautiously optimistic. I feel like, you know, people are much more committed now to mask wearing indoors and out since Winnipeg has advanced to code orange in our pandemic scale. Now face masks are required indoors and outdoors. And, you know, while placemakers from a professional perspective, we don't usually get into that level of public policy. Ours is usually much more neighborhood-based and urban form-based. But, you know, since Winnipeg has moved into Code Orange, people seem to be hunkered down and certainly committing to a lot more physical distancing, a lot more hand washing, a lot more mask wearing, and a lot more, you know, staying home when you're sick. And of course, that's really a challenge for people who don't have the sick leave. So that's something I think we're still working out up here.
Well, Hazel, I hope everyone stays safe. I think there's a lesson to learn between Manitoba and North Dakota, because quite frankly, North Dakota's numbers have people scared. So I appreciate you coming on today. Thanks for giving us your time.
Well, we're pulling for you up here, and we're hoping that some of the initiatives that you're starting to implement really work.
Okay. Thank you, Hazel. Hazel Boris, ladies and gentlemen.